Good morning and welcome everyone to the first event in this year's Augsburger Lecture Series on Christian Mission and Evangelism. The Augsburger Lecture Series honors the legacy of Myron and Esther Augsburger and what they have meant to this campus. Myron, as many of you know, is former president of the university. Esther has been very involved in the arts at EMU, and you'll see many of her artworks on campus as you walk around campus. We're honored to have Myron with us this morning. Thank you, Myron and Esther, for all you've meant to the university. I'm very pleased and honored to introduce this year's lecturer, Nelson Okanye. Nelson Okanye is president of Eastern Mennonite Missions. Eastern Mennonite Missions, not to be confused with Eastern Mennonite University, is a mission agency of the Lancaster Conference of the Mennonite Church. Nelson has been president of EMM since October 2011. He was born and raised in Kenya, where his family was part of the Mennonite Church in Kenya, and there he interacted with the EMM mission community in Nairobi. He's participated in a number of short-term cross-cultural mission experiences, and we're very proud to claim him as an alum. He's a 2002 graduate with an MDiv from Eastern Mennonite Seminary. After that, he served for almost 6 years as pastor of a multicultural, multinational congregation in Washington, D.C., the Capital Christian Fellowship. Among his many areas of interest are Anabaptist witness and mission, and particularly what that means in the context of a postmodern world in the 21st century. He has a special interest in the next generation of Mennonites and the church as a narrative-formed, transforming community. He's the father of two boys. He enjoys hiking, volleyball, reading, researching, and teaching. I feel a special connection to Nelson because of the fact that I lived for 5 years in Nairobi myself. I was tempted to do this introduction in Swahili, but my Swahili has gotten so rusty I would have embarrassed myself and insulted Nelson. But Nelson, thank you very much for being with us and welcome to EMU.
Good morning. Thank you to Provost Nest and to this campus ministry for inviting me to do this honored lecture series. I'm honored by the invitation and also feel a little trepidation as well, because I remember when I used to attend these lectures when I was a student at EMS, the first time I came to attend these lectures, Dr. Richard Hayes was here giving the lectures. So when I got the invitation, you could see what happened to my mind. Richard Hayes and me just didn't match. But I prayed about it, sought the Lord about it, and also knowing what is in my heart and what I bring to this experience is who I am and the journey that the Lord has led me through up to this time. And I bring you greetings from my wife, who is also a graduate of this institution, Jessica, and our boys, Barack, who is 8, and Isaac, who is almost 6, as he always reminds us. Next month, he's going to be 6. And I also bring you greetings from staff at Eastern Mennonite Missions in Salonga, Pennsylvania. And with me is our church relations coordinator, Andy Mashes, and I hope you will have some time to meet him. Before I deliver what the Lord has given me in my heart this morning, I'd like to start by a clip of a video that will lay out what I'm just about to talk about here. And I invite you to pay attention to the contrasting narratives in that video, and from there I will come to the pulpit.
They've told me the story 1,000 times. Parents, teachers, study hard, they say. Go to church, be nice to others. Try out lots of things and excel in something. You'll get accepted into a good college, connect with a good church, finish a degree. You'll get a good paying job, and life will be good. Really? Isn't that kind of a small story, maybe even an irrelevant story in the real world? A world of increasing isolation and loneliness, of violence against the soul, of wars that aren't ending, of cancer, terrorism, hatred, legalism, depression, illiteracy, emptiness, famine and hunger, division, pettiness, Alzheimer's, violent crime, poverty, sex trafficking, apathy, rudeness, pollution, suicide, corruption, gang violence, panic, chaos. A world running short on hope. Is this state of the world inevitable? Is this what God intended? Where's the good life in the middle of such a mess? Wait a minute. I've got to look beyond the sad, messed up, horrible headlines. Got to listen to the other story. A story that's just as real as all the chaos and pain, even though it's mostly untold. A movement of people filled with hope and love. People captivated by a beautiful, invisible, glorious God who has good plans for our planet. People who believe that transformation of the mess is not only possible, but inevitable. Believe it so deeply, they've dedicated themselves to lifelong, joyful obedience to this God. These disciples of Jesus are comforting, healing, helping, renaming, rebuilding, restoring, announcing good news. All around the world, even in the hardest, darkest places, Jesus is transforming lives. And these transformed ones turn around and multiply the transformation into other lives, eventually impacting whole communities. Not overnight, bit by bit. Not without lots of messy moments, grace by grace. Not without sacrifice, love, and then more love. I hear it. Our invitation from the author of the story, the one with the huge heart of love, the plans for good, is inviting us to risk believing the kingdom of God will come on earth, to be filled with the Spirit of Jesus, to move humbly and boldly in our world to spark transformation. It only takes one word to get connected, to be written into the story.
Thank you, Matt. In our world today, here in the United States of America, various narratives are shaping and forming who we are and how we live our lives. And in that video clip, we saw the narrative of the good life, the narrative that invites us to move towards something that we will get from doing certain things right. And that is, I believe, in many ways, or in some ways, is the reason you as students are here in a university setting to get a good education, to get a better life. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the reason I also went to college, in search, or at least in hopes, of a better life. But I'm here this morning to talk about a different narrative, an alternative narrative, that is just as important, if not very, very important. The narrative that says or talks about a God who is at work in the world. That God is alive and well and is at work in the world. And that God and the story of that God who is at work in the world was clearly revealed to us in the life, death, resurrection, and the promised return of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, more fully. But we also see that story in the life of Israel, the story of a people. And while these people were going through a life that is difficult, God, we see in Exodus 3, God shows up, and God articulates a vision to redeem them and to save them from this horrible situation and state of life that they were living. And so that story has inspired many, many generations, not only in the biblical times, but that story has inspired generations in our own century as well. We heard that story reverberate in the streets of Soweto, South Africa. We heard that story in Central America, in South America. Yes, in this heartland of America. We heard that story with a common theme, Pharaoh, Pharaoh, let my people go. That is the story of a God who is engaged in the world, moving to make things right. It is the story that was invoked when the returned exiles were back in their land, and the land was destroyed. The temple had been destroyed, and Isaiah articulates this vision in Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. Isaiah goes on to talk about this vision in Isaiah 61, verse 4, where Isaiah articulates this way to them. These people who had returned from exile, coming back to their homeland, in Jerusalem, Isaiah speaks to them this way. Under the situations that they were going to, broken hearts, mourning and gnashing of teeth, which is something that we are very familiar with even today. As we are sitting here, an airliner, a German airline, crashed in the French Alps with 150 passengers, including 16 high school students from Germany. This is the world we live in. A world running short on hope. But for the exiles, this is the words of Isaiah. They shall build up the ancient ruins. They shall raise up the former devastations. They shall repair the ruined cities, the devastations of many generations. For as the earth brings forth its shoots, and as a garden causes what is sown in it to spring up, so the Lord God will cause righteousness and praise to spring up before all the nations. That vision was much bigger than just that particular group of people. This was a vision that was envisioning the whole world experiencing righteousness. And righteousness in its biblical terms, not simply morality. It includes that. But righteousness as wholeness, as Walter Brueggemann talks about. It's wholeness, it's new life, it's life-giving reality that these people, these returned exiles that were probably brokenhearted and hopeless, they will be called oaks of righteousness. And God, through them, will bring about righteousness and praise to spring up before all the nations. This is the story I'm talking about. This is the story that inspired our Anabaptist forebears to not be complicit to the intermingling of church and state in the state of the world that was basically status quo. I came to this story about 19 years ago as a participant at the Baltimore Discipleship Center, when we were showed the movie The Radicals. That's the first time. I was born and raised in a Mennonite home in Kenya. I had never seen anything like that. It was the first time I saw the movie The Radicals that it really raised a deep sense of wrestling within me as a young Mennonite going back home. What does it mean for me to be Anabaptist? Does it really matter? Does my faith matter? Does it matter to the point that I would be standing to be drowned, to be killed, to be burned at the stake? That's the story. This is a powerful, shaping story. It's a story that inspired that generation. It is the story that inspired Mennonites here in North America to send workers to places that were then called Dark Continent, the home of my birth. These missionaries left, and they came to my place of birth. And they went. I've now had an opportunity to go back to these homes, these churches that sent these workers. And I sometimes go there, and especially when I was taken to the home of Ilam Stauffer, one of the first missionaries that left Lancaster County to go to Tanganyika at that time. And I went to his home and I was showed where he was born. And I could not reconcile the fact that this person left this beautiful, lush land with all the farmland and everything there to go in the jungles of Africa. And within a few months, they had a stillborn child. And within a few years, his beloved wife, Elizabeth, passed away. And you go back to Tanzania, and you see all the gravesites and all the graveyards. These people were compelled by a story that is much bigger than the good life. They were compelled by a story that is much bigger than what they could get in life. They actually, some of them, gave it all as well. This is the story that I'm talking about. This is the story that has inspired these Mennonites all over the continent of Africa. They went with all the mistakes that you can list, but also go and see the sprawling faith communities all over the place. With 70-something thousand Mennonites in Tanzania, 11,000 Mennonites in Kenya, 450,000 Mennonites and Anabaptists in Ethiopia. I was just in Central America, in Guatemala, in Honduras, working in these communities, visiting the Kekchi people up in the mountains. And I saw a school with young people, both male and female. We went to the girls' dormitories, and somebody told us these girls at this age, they would all be married, because they were marrying these girls at about 12 or 13 years of age. But these girls at this time, we were looking at them very, very inspired, and were looking forward to being nurses. They were going to get a shot at life that their parents did not have. Why? Because some Mennonite people in this beautiful land felt compelled to go. They made a difference. Right now, after the war in Central America, in Guatemala, the government was looking for a way to help with the healthcare system. And they sent a group to do a research to find out which healthcare system was working better that they could support. They came back and said the Mennonites had the best healthcare system. Now you go back to Guatemala now, Mennonite healthcare system is ranked the best in the country, run by the Kekchi people, not by Americans. The difference that you can make in life, because you're compelled, not by what you can get, but in response to the one who loved you and gave his life. This is a story of mission. It's not the story of sharing superior cultures, superior economic philosophies, superior ways of understanding the world. It is a story of a life that is given, a life that calls forth life from others. It's the story of God. It's an alternative story. It is a story that inspired a young girl at 12 years of age in Kansas, Phoebe Yoder, who heard a call in her time of prayer alone. She felt that God had spoken to her very clearly and said, "Phoebe, I'm sending you to Africa." And as a young 12-year-old, she started to save a few dollars. Later, those dollars were used as the first installment to send workers into Africa. And then later, she went to college, got a nursing degree, went to East Africa, and served for many, many years. And her life transformed the community. as a nurse, as an educator, help develop educational systems. Yes, her life was transformed by the power of God. She was touched, also transformed even deeper by the revival, the East African revival, affected her life so much that she came and she could not stop talking about it. She went, not as a superior person, but as someone who had a message of a God who loved all people, who wanted to see a difference in their own lives. And she was also transformed in the process. That's the story we're talking about. This is just the beginning. This is also the story that touched my father, my own father, who was raised in the village of Africa. And his father died when he was in seventh grade, essentially ending his formal education. So as somebody in seventh grade rising up and quote-unquote growing up so fast to take care of his own siblings and his mother. And so he became a very violent man. Deep inside was a boy who was crying out for love. He was encountered by this story. And I don't have time to tell you all the how that happened, but it's a very moving story. He was encountered by this story, but being called at night to get up and read 1 Corinthians 13, which he did not even understand a thing. And he went to an elder who told him, John, God is calling you. My father today is a different man. He is actually leading right now the first planted Mennonite church in Kenya. God changed his life dramatically. I can't explain it. But God got a hold of him and changed his life. This is the story I'm here to talk about. This is a story that continues to inspire young Anabaptists, young Mennonites, to serve through Mennonite Mission Network, Virginia Mennonite Missions, Eastern Mennonite Missions, Mennonite Central Committee. We are seeing these young people going to places like Erbil, Iraq. They are going to Syria. They are going to different places, not with guns, but with the good news, serving in the name of Jesus Christ. I read a beautiful article written by an archbishop from Syria to MCC. And I am moved, warm, my heart is warmed. These are not people that are going to take a life. They are people who are going in response to a story. Their lives have been summoned by a story. My life has been summoned by a story. And I come here to say, I am saying, yes, Jesus. Yes, Lord. And we continue to see young graduates from this institution, from the seminary, responding to God's call today. Just most recently, a PhD from a reputable institution here in America, who could get a job in any Mennonite university, responded to that call under very difficult circumstances, which, of course, I cannot talk about in details for security reasons. I finish by a quote from Richard Hayes, since I talked about him earlier. Talking about Jesus, Richard Hayes writes, Jesus can be known as Son of God only when he is known as the crucified one. Obedience to God required Jesus to be a suffering Messiah. And subsequently, all who follow him are summoned to a similar vocation. To be Jesus' disciples means to allow one's own identity to be stamped by the identity of the one who died forsaken on the cross. When we embrace Mark's answer of the question, who do you say I am? We are not just making a theological affirmation about Jesus' identity. We are choosing our identity as well. So when we say yes to Jesus, we are identifying with his suffering. But we're summoned. Our lives are taken a hold of by a power that is stronger than any wounding force, and we respond in obedience to that calling. Let this conversation continue on this campus. May God bless you.